What's up, OAUXers? Today, I am continuing the Orca series with my top tips on system modeling. So I'm going to be covering how I use system models, which is just an incredibly powerful tool and really hopefully helping you kind of level up on how you use system models. So we're going to be going over what a system model is and my 8 strategies for how to best use them. Welcome to the Object-Oriented UX Podcast, a podcast about tackling complexity head-on, gracefully organizing massive amounts of information, and designing scalable, future-proof, and of course, naturally intuitive object-oriented user experiences. An OAUXer is a powerful blend of information architect, business analyst, facilitator, and UX strategist. If this sounds like you or what you aspire to, you are so in the right place. I'm Sophia Prater, UX designer, chief evangelist of Object-Oriented UX, and your host. Let's jump into it. So you're probably familiar with system models. This is basically a boxes and arrows diagram where the boxes, or they could be actually circles, which we'll talk about later, those boxes represent concepts or objects, and the arrows usually describe relationships with cardinality. So cardinality being like has one versus has many. So similar diagrams. There's lots of similar diagrams out there. So domain models. So these are very much like system models, but they just include way more objects. So a domain model is modeling the entire domain, like healthcare or personal finance or something like that, while a system model is modeling the objects that your system is responsible for and that are going to actually show up within your system. So it's a model of the system versus a model of the entire domain. Content models, also very, very similar, almost synonymous. Like sometimes it is synonymous depending on who you're talking to, but usually content models are focusing more on content types instead of this more broad view that also includes objects that might not always be categorized as a content type. Again, depending on who you're talking to, but that's kind of a whole other discussion. When you picture a system model, you can probably picture a content model and you're going to be all good. And then there's entity relationship diagrams, ERDs. And ERDs usually, those go way back. A lot of developers used to use ERDs to kind of map out databases. So those usually are going to contain attributes as well. But system models can contain attributes too, which we're going to talk about. So entity relationship diagrams, ERDs, content models, system models, all kind of synonymous, all right? I call them system models because they're a model of the system, all right? Content model to me gets you thinking too much about things that just get categorized as content versus particularly like something like the user you don't think about necessarily as content. So some objects might not get included if you're just thinking about it as content. But that again depends on how you define content and content types. Okay, so system modeling is the first official activity in the relationship discovery step of the Orca process. So that those that are new to Orca, let me do a quick review of what Orca is. And if you know this like the back of your hand, then just go ahead and skip ahead 2 minutes. Hey Siri, set a timer for 2 minutes.
2 minutes, counting down.
Okay, let's see if I can do this in 2 minutes. So ORCA stands for Objects, Relationships, Calls to Action, and Attributes, okay? And the ORCA process basically hits the O, the R, the C, and the A multiple times. We iterate on this, okay? So what I call the O, the R, and the C, and the A, I call those the pillars of the ORCA process, okay? And then we have rounds that iterate on the O, the R, the C, and the A. So first we had the discovery round. So that is about like just sussing out all the questions, really kind of figuring out what level of complexity are we actually dealing with here? What even are the objects? Doing a rough cut on mapping out the relationships. It really is this rough cut where often you come up with more questions than answers. Then we go into requirements where we go in and we hit the O, the R, the C, and the A again at a deeper level, okay? So that's when we build out the object guide during object requirements, which is basically like a glossary a glossary on steroids. Then we get into my Cat Saving Fire Department and relationship requirements, which is an acronym. We just get into all of the details. We basically build out object-oriented user stories in the CTA requirements, and basically in attribute requirements, we create metadata and meta core content. So we just go this like level deeper. And then we go into prioritization, where we basically cut the O's, the R's, the C's, and the A's. Maybe not cut, but we prioritize them into usually phases. So it's kind of where we build out a roadmap. So we're prioritizing from a business/technology perspective. So how does it make sense to actually build this out? What do we need to build first? What do we need to do more research on? What do we need to build second, third? But then also prioritizing it from a user perspective, and is like, does this attribute need to show farther up the screen or lower down the screen? Or do we need to highlight it in some way? That was 2 minutes. Oh my God. Okay. All right. So the last thing I'll say, 2 minutes goes so fast. The last thing I'll say about the Orca process is we have another round where it's representation, where everything comes together. Okay. So those are the four rounds of the Orca process. You can mix them. You can match them. You can skip around. You can do prioritization and then requirements. It's super flexible. Okay, so that's Orca for you. Where was I? Back to system modeling. So system modeling sits in step two, basically. We've gone through object discovery. Now we're in relationship discovery. And there's two main activities that we have in relationship discovery, and that is system modeling and then the nested object matrix. But we're focusing on system modeling today. So we're sitting here at system modeling. We've moved out of object discovery. We've got a pretty good idea on what our objects are. And now we need to start the basic mapping of how these objects relate to each other. So the real star of relationship discovery is the NOM, or the nested object matrix. But I rarely jump in to a NOM without having done some system modeling first. All right, and both of these tools are so, so powerful. But to be honest, the nested object matrix is just super hard to talk about on a podcast without visuals. It's just a very visual diagram. It's a matrix. But basically what the NOM is it's a scalable way to explore all the possible relationships in a system, even if that system has 200 objects. So system models, on the other hand, break down in legibility. Once you get to like 10 plus objects, it's like, it gets a little bit hard to read, right? And especially if you have multiple relationships between two objects in a system model, it just turns into this bowl of spaghetti. So the NOM elegantly solves for that, okay? It just lets you kind of play relationship battleship. It lets you do this gap analysis where you can also just really systematically explore all the relationships. While in a system model, it's really easy to kind of forget or gloss over the relationship between two different objects, especially if they're like at opposite ends of your diagram and drawing that arrow is just difficult. You might not actually think about the relationships. So that's where the nested object matrix really shines, okay? So I do a quick take on the nested object matrix in my Udemy course with Joe Natoli. You can go to Udemy, just search OUX on Udemy. I will put a link in the show notes for that. And we do a deep dive on the nested object matrix in the OUX masterclass, of course. So you can also find links to those in OUX.com/training. But today, and of course, we talk about the system modeling too, right? Okay, today though, we're gonna go and we're gonna focus on boxes and arrows, or circles and arrows in some cases. So I've got these 8 super practical hot tips for how to level up your system modeling prowess. Okay, but before we jump into those tips, I want to talk a little bit about the why. Why do we do this? Why is it so important to map relationships? Why are OUXers so obsessed with the R of Orca? Often it's said like, that's the most fun. It's like the most mind-bending and the most important part of the Orca process. Why? Why does it matter so much? 2 reasons, my friends. First, relationships help define a thing. Or an object. Okay, so just try for me to define anything without relating that thing to other things. It's actually pretty impossible. So our good friend, Richard Saul Warman, I never got to meet Richard Saul Warman, but he is basically the father of information architecture. I do believe he coined the term information architecture. He says, we can only understand a thing in relation to something we already understand. don't know if that's direct. That's almost exactly what he said. I don't have the quote right in front of me, but I pretty much have it memorized. We can only understand a thing in relation to something we already understand. So we're going to be coming back to this when we talk about squares versus circles in your system model. But this is very, very important that especially if you have kind of some fuzzy concepts that users are not incredibly clear on what that thing is, they need to be anchored in other objects that they do understand. Okay, we're going to come back to this, all right? Now, number two, this is so important because this is going to plan out your navigation for you, okay? So relationships should be the main form of navigation because we're mapping out the user's mental model here, how they think about how things connect, and that is going to be the most intuitive way for them to navigate. Okay, if I'm looking at an event and I see all the people that are going to that event, I'm going to want to click on somebody's face and then be able to see maybe what other events they're going to, maybe see a little bit more information about them, maybe see the events that they host. Okay, if I'm looking at an event, maybe I want to see the group host of that event. Okay, and I want to click over to that and see what other events. All right, so navigating through the relationships is going to be the most natural way for users to explore your system. Okay, there is nothing intuitive about navigating through a list of static links at the top of a page, okay? Now, we do need main navigation, global navigation, whatever you want to call it. We need that, but I want you to think about that as your fire escape, okay? That is like the user just needs to kind of go back, like, okay, let me just go back to a top level, all right? But the main way that they're going to have that beautiful exploration is going to be through navigating through the relationships between objects, okay? Oh, I have a good example of this actually from the last podcast. So when I talked to Chase Roberts and we were talking about his work as a content designer at Wealthfront, this is just the last episode, so I think it's episode 39. He was talking about how they created this object, Stock Collections, and they also have Stock Collection is a collection of stocks. And so of course you would see the stock collection, then you would see the stocks inside and be able to navigate to the details of one of those stocks. But they also did it the flip side. And if you were seeking a stock, you would see the collections. If it is part of any collections, those collections would surface. So the relationships went both ways because they were thinking in this object-oriented way. They were mapping their relationships. And they said, oh, if you're looking at a stock, we better surface the collections that stock is a part of. And this tested really well for them. It actually felt really natural. It felt actually, I think he used the word, it felt really fun for people that were exploring and trying to figure out what stocks and what stock collections they wanted to add to their portfolio. Okay, let's jump into these 8 hot, hot, hot tips that I've got for you. All right, number one. So all that stuff that I said about the system modeling happening during relationship discovery after you've already done your object discovery, I take that back. You can actually do system modeling before relationship discovery. Use it while you are noun foraging. And go back to my number one in my Orca series about noun foraging if you want hot tips about that. But I do, as I'm noun foraging, I'm usually doing it on pen and paper, and I am doing little system models in the margins. Okay, especially if it's just exploring two objects. So if you see something in noun foraging, like let's say let's do National Park Service, which I use that as an example a lot, one of my favorite examples. And let's say you're doing noun foraging and you read something like, our trails will often cross from one park to another. For example, the Appalachian Trail goes through 6 parks. That's true, it does go through 6 national parks. So I'm gonna do a little system model on the sidebar with trail and park showing that this is a many-to-many relationship. I thought it was a trail is just for one park, right? That was kind of like my assumption. This whole process just blows assumptions out of the water. And then I realized, oh, well, trails can go through, up to 6 parks maybe. So we need to be able to account for that. So I'm going to draw a little system model in the margin, okay? Another example. So I am prepping for a workshop with the Church of Latter-day Saints, which is very exciting. And I was doing a little bit of noun foraging and I read there's objects. We have members of the church and there's something called callings within the Church of Latter-day Saints, which is basically like a mission that you go on, I think, or like this is like, it's a calling basically, which is usually some sort of like long-term service project. So one thing that I was wondering is this relationship between members and callings. Do you have multiple callings? So I might read something like, a member only has one calling at a time. Oh, wait, what am I going to read? Actually, I'm going to bring you a direct quote here. Generally, each member is called to serve in only one calling at a time. Okay, so that's where I'm not just going to, in noun foraging, I'm not just going to highlight member and calling. I'm going to do that little system model in the sidebar that shows me that a member is really just going to have one calling at a time. And that's also going to probably make me think of a question is, let's say in this system, are we going to show past callings or like a history, like a timeline of callings? Because a member could have zero to many past callings or like completed callings. So this just really gets the juices flowing when it comes to asking questions. So start early. Go ahead and start doing a little bit of system modeling as you're doing noun foraging to start trying to define these objects. Okay, number two, just start with two objects. Like I just said, just start with these two objects and then add objects one at a time. So this is kind of like additive system modeling is really, I do this a lot. I just kind of like let the system model grow. So I've got like a little tiny system model that's starting to bring clarity to members and callings. And I might grow my system model when I start to read about, for example, how callings relate to stakes, which is another object in the LDS system. Okay, so starting with two objects, I would also say, is a really great way to warm up for a workshop. Okay, so that brings us actually to my third one. Use system modeling as a warm up for the nested object matrix in a workshop setting. So the NOM is one of the most valuable activities in an ORCA sprint. So you really want to make sure people understand what they're doing. Okay. So, and the NOM can be a little bit of a mind melt sometimes. So doing the system modeling first and then showing it translate over to the nested object matrix can be gold. So doing just a simple two object system model, then adding a third object and saying, okay, now add your third, do it here, like say something like, okay, articles and authors or books and authors, like something really simple, make them draw a system model with just, and you can even like have it already drawn out and all they have to do is label the arrows, okay? And then you add a third object like publisher or something like that. So just doing it for something super, super simple. So you add the third object. And then what you can do is you can translate that over into just a 3x3 nested object matrix to show kind of, okay, how does this system model and these boxes and arrows translate over into this nested object matrix? Okay, so start with, I mean, if you're going to use objects in your system when you do this and workshopping in general, and you're kind of teaching about these relationships, start with those least ambiguous objects and relationships, or just pick something like I just did, like events, people, and groups or something like that, or books, publishers, and authors, where people like already have a pretty clear mental model. And they're just, so it's just about the diagramming and not about actually figuring out what the model is. All right. Did I say that was number four? Did I mess up my numbering? We're on number four now. That might have been number three. I think that was number three. All right, number four. All right, I gotta get better at counting if I'm gonna do these listicle type pieces of content. Okay, so number four, use shorthand. All right, I use this all the time. Usually my only label, if I'm doing a little system model, especially like those little sidebar models, I'm just doing it for myself, I am usually only labeling with the arrows. Of course, I'm labeling my boxes, but my arrows, I'm usually just labeling a 1 or an M. 1 for has one, M for has many. And that's usually like all I'm putting there. You can always write more if you need to, but in most cases, just a 1 or an M is totally fine. And then I elaborate way more once I get to the nested object matrix. But usually my system models are pretty like quick and dirty. Okay, number five, squares versus circles. Okay, so much additional information can be layered upon a system model by thinking about even just the shapes that you're using. So you can just use shapes in general if you need to have like categories of objects. It's a little bit more accessible than using color for color coding. So a lot of diagramming tools will have shapes. So you can have shapes for all sorts of different objects and different categories of objects. Now, what I will often do is I use squares or rectangles for my much more concrete, well-understood objects, and I will use circles for an object that feels a lot more abstract and a lot more fuzzy. So, remember when we were talking about how relationships help define a thing? So if you have a more abstract thing, like let's say stake in the LDS world, okay? So you might read something like, the stake is an intermediate level in the organizational hierarchy of the LDS church. This is from Wikipedia. The lowest level, consisting of a single congregation, is known as a ward. Stakes are organized from a group of contiguous wards. To be created, a stake must be composed of at least 5 wards. Like, you can start seeing the cardinality, right? I know that sounded like a lot, but once you can draw, I can draw a very quick system model of that that explains basically, which in a sentence is like actually kind of a little bit confusing. You might have had to listen to that twice, but I can draw a system model of that. And what I would do here is I would put stake in a circle kind of in the middle, because it's this like more abstract thing that maybe a lot of people that are maybe coming into the LDS church or are like, you know, just thinking about coming into the LDS church, they don't understand what stakes are, but they do understand what a congregation is. Okay. And so we have a little bit of, there's a ward that is another term for congregation. So I would probably put like ward and then in parentheses congregation. I would put that in a square or rectangle, because that's pretty clear. And then even members are a part of that congregation slash ward, and that a ward is made up of 5 or more. So a ward, let me see if I get this right. A stake has 5 too many, 5 or more wards that are a part of it. And a ward, oh, I believe a ward only has 1 stake that it's a part of. And that's a great, so now I have a question. Now I was like, oh, can a ward be a part of multiple stakes? Like, if I'm going to be building software for these guys, I need to know that, right? That's actually a super valid question. So it's going to really help you bring up additional questions. So in that diagram, basically what I'm doing is I'm saying, okay, I've got some fuzzy concept here or an unfamiliar concept of stake, but I have familiar concepts that I can anchor it into. So I'll put those in squares to kind of visualize this, like, we've got our like really nice solid building blocks. And then we've got, sometimes I'll even use in Whimsical, there's a cloud. So I'll use like a cloud instead of a circle too, to really show that this is like a little bit more fuzzy. So we need to really clearly connect it to the objects that people already have a really clear picture of. Number 6, combine system modeling with object mapping. So this is basically a color-coded ERD. So I usually wouldn't have more than like 3. Usually I have 3 objects when I do this, and I'll tell you why in a second. But I wouldn't do this with more than like 4-5 objects. It's just a lot of information for somebody to process. So basically what I'm doing here is I am doing my system model kind of like in a horizontal line, so that I have all the arrows, but basically it's like all my boxes are sort of lined up. And then underneath that, I start stacking some attributes that are relevant to that particular model. I especially like doing this when I illustrate why a junction object is needed. Okay, so I will link a video in the show notes. This really needs some visuals, but I will link that video of me explaining junction objects, and you can see these system model object map hybrid things that really show that you need that junction object because the attributes don't make sense on any of the parent, on either of the parent objects. You need that junction object to put the, to house those attributes. So if you have no idea what I'm talking about, just see the show notes. I will link that. I'll link my junction object article and also the video that kind of walks through that. Okay. Number 7, using pen and paper, and using pen and paper first. I talk about this a lot here and there. Do I talk about that? I think I talk about this a lot. Leveraging that mind-body connection. So when I say the best tool for system modeling is pen and paper, also big pen and big paper, like flip chart, large whiteboard. Honestly, like system modeling is so great for just like mapping out, even if you're just thinking about ideas, you're thinking about how all these objects can like work together and you're really just starting to like grapple and feel out this system. Honestly, like this is, it's just amazing how much a bigger piece of paper helps. It's pretty ridiculous. It helps you kind of think bigger, helps you think more expansively. You can use your body a little bit more, not to get too woo-woo here, but there is something to do with that mind-body connection. And the more that you can like stand up, be on a whiteboard, be on a big flip chart, I'll have a couple of flip charts. I'll just put them next to each other and stick them up to the wall so that I'm kind of like, I just have a really big canvas to play on. And my drawing, I'm not using my wrist so much. I'm using my entire arm to draw. And there is just really something to that. So of course, find the digital tool that works for you. I really like Whimsical most of the time. Sometimes those arrows do crazy things, but I really do enjoy Whimsical for system modeling. I think about my brand colors in there and everything, but I will often do this in pen and paper first. And then I use either Sharpies or I order those just black Crayola markers because they're non-toxic and they don't smell, but like a big thick marker too, where I just can't get into too much detail. And a big ass piece of paper too is just really helpful when it comes to system modeling, whether you're doing it collaboratively and doing it in a workshop setting or doing it on your own. And going back to that workshop setting, I would highly encourage you to do this with flip charts, even if it's just like a three object. This is, you know, love some recycling, love not using paper when I don't have to, but this is paper well spent, and getting people to understand the system better. Okay. And the last thing I want to talk about, going back to that bowl of spaghetti that I talked about, near the beginning of the podcast, when I was talking about how like the difference between a nested object matrix and a system model is that when you scale a system model, it just can get really confusing because you have all these connections, you have all these objects. So here's a sneaky little thing. Sometimes you actually want a kind of unreadable diagram. All right. So when you want that is when you're mapping an existing system that is a total cluster muffin. Okay. Like you want to show how messed up it is. All right. I think I talked about this. Scott Kuby gave me this idea when we were talking. He was on the podcast talking about content ecosystems and how he maps the existing status quo content ecosystem, literally just to show people how messed up it might be. And what, like, this is like what you are expecting of people that are working within this content ecosystem. And I just love that. So showing a kind of a before and after, or even a progression toward a cleaner model, can be really, really effective. So I did this in a project that I worked on with Brad Frost and Josh Clark for an ed tech product. And I mapped out the current system model, which was pretty convoluted, and they were expecting like grade school and middle school students to use this and comprehend it. And it had really similar objects that kind of overlapped a lot in functionality. Like it had the concept of a unit and also the concept of a project. And I think it was like, it's a unit if it's for a math project, but it's a project if it's for like reading or history or anything else. And there's like slightly different attributes, but they probably should just be the same object with a little bit of conditional logic in there and not two completely different labels. So there was, if I'm remembering correctly, this was, I think, a year and a half ago. Time, I don't know. So it was unit and project. And there's also like checkpoint, objective, and activity. I think that we're all very, very similar. And one thing that I was proposing is to combine those. So combine unit and project and combine checkpoint, objective, and activity. And I showed, and also like just cleaning up some of the relationships too, but I basically showed, this is your current system model. And y'all, it was ugly. It was ugly. And it was like, oh man, it really just gave a visceral feeling of like, this is what you are expecting people to navigate. Like really, like this is really hard to look at actually. And then I showed, okay, well, if you combine these objects and you combine these objects and then we map these relationships. So this relationship works like this, and literally just untangled those arrows. I basically made the system model prettier. And usually a prettier and more elegant system model will provide a foundation for an easier to understand user experience. Okay, so you can really leverage system modeling really when you want to expose unnecessary complexity. It's pretty powerful that way. Okay, it's kind of sneaky too. All right, y'all. Those are my 8 hot tips on system modeling. I hope you're excited about doing some system modeling, integrating more system modeling into your practice, and just kind of leveling up on this. It's just a You know, boxes and arrows. Great way to think. So y'all, please let me know on Twitter. Let me know which of these was really resonating with you, which you think you might try. Feel free to show me pictures of your system models. That's at Sophia VUX on the Twitter. And next time, when I come back for my Orca series, part 3, I'm going to be talking about my top tips for the CTA matrix. All right. Until then, happy OUXing, y'all.
Thank you so much for listening. I truly hope you enjoyed this episode. Please visit objectorientux.com/podcast for show notes. Our soundtrack is Fighter by Ruby Vell, courtesy of Sugaroo Records. Happy OUXing!